Aussies love the bush, but sometimes the bloody bush doesn't love us back. I'm John Harper, just a simple joker talking about why mental health is everybody's business and what to do if you think a mate is struggling.
I remember standing in the doorway talking to my wife, and I just felt my heart just belting out of my chest. And at that point, I actually thought I was having a heart attack. And then it disappeared, and I thought, that's very strange. That is one of the toughest parts about falling into a dark space, is not actually knowing if you're in it or not. You know, I can attribute the drought, probably losing the family property.
Sometimes we've got to accept that life ain't perfect. We're not going to get 100 points. We're only going to get 97, but let's be grateful for that.
If you don't have the capacity to deal with the goal that you haven't met, you know, that's self-imposed pressure, and it doesn't need to exist.
This podcast is a Room 3 production and brought to you by our mates at the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries and their Rural Resilience Team and the Murrumbidgee Primary Health Network. In this podcast, you'll be hearing the lived experiences of everyday folk in rural and remote Australia. The language can be strong at times, and references of suicide may upset some people. So consider who's within earshot when listening. Any advice in this podcast is of a general nature and not an excuse for you not seeing your own GP or medical professional. We've got plenty of links on the Mate Helping Mate website of trusted service providers across the country. So go to matehelpingmate.org.au.
G'day podcasters, John Harper here. Welcome to the Mate Helping Mate podcast. Today we are chatting to an interesting bloke at Carr Station, a property outside of Broken Hill. Brendan Cullen is one of the few blokes I know that acknowledged he had a mental health issue, and he ended up on the steps of Broken Hill Hospital and ultimately diagnosed with depression. Hopefully today, Brendan will give us a look into his life, into what's got him through the shit. And there'll be things about puffedaloons. Do any of you know what the hell puffedaloons are? But then there's other things he'll talk about, mindfulness and about goal setting. And he's got one bloody big goal he's put right at the end. So stay listening and welcome to you, Brendan. Good day, mate. How you going?
How you going there, John?
I'm pretty good, buddy. We've been getting a bit of rain here, putting the wind up some of us crop farmers. How are you getting on out that way?
Not too bad, mate. It's the conditions have been kind to us in the last 6 weeks, which has been wonderful, I would say, through, you know, drought conditions and whatnot. But certainly the seasons are changing in the far west for the better.
So it sounds like we're all in a pretty good place, mate. How did you get to this place? Was it always this good? How's life treated you?
Yeah, look, I certainly had my struggles from probably a lot further back than what I thought. I was diagnosed with depression.
Was it obvious?
Yeah.
Was it something that crept up on you?
I think it was with me for a long time, but I never knew what it was. And, you know, I can attribute the drought, probably losing the family property. There was a number of things, and I had this inability to get a lot of rubbish out of my head. So I used to play games with myself. I used to talk with myself all the time, to a point where literally there could be someone I perceive sitting next to me and having a two-way conversation. And for me, that was just a coping mechanism. But what I was really doing was I was bogging up a lot of stuff, you know, mentally in my head, and I had this inability to be able to get rid of it, unbeknownst to me. So, you know, with all that going on in my head, I suppose over time it took a major toll on me. I remember standing in the doorway on a property I was managing and talking to my wife, and I just felt my heart just belting out of my chest. And at that point, I actually thought I was having a heart attack. And then it disappeared, and I thought, that's very strange. From that point on, I still knew that there was something going on, but I didn't know what. And all this time around me, there was always help available, but I didn't know where to go. And I didn't actually give myself permission or give myself over to acknowledge that I was having problems. I was just, you know, going 24/7, trying to make ends meet, put bread on the table, trying to keep the property going and whatever else was going on in my head. And it got the better of me.
How did you acknowledge that you had an issue that you went off?
We did this wellbeing thing in Broken Hill with the RFDS, Royal Flying Doctor Service, and there was a life skills coach. We sat down and did a couple of these courses, in fact, and I realised at the time that I was in a pretty ordinary space.
Why did you end up going to a life skill course? Who put the pressure on? What made you decide to do that? I mean, most people I know, or most blokes in particular that I know, kind of are adverse to that sort of stuff. What do you think got you to attend?
I think it was initially from my wife, to be quite truthful.
And it is good, isn't it, to learn and to move forward, but it's also good that you recognise people like, you know, the Royal Flying Doctors, positive people, positive organisations that are doing stuff. So, yeah, all credit to you to go.
Thanks, John. You know, you walk into an environment and they're all like-minded people. Their intentions are to make sure you're okay. It's all about making sure you're better, making sure you're healthier. And most of those organisations are on that same page. So I always say, whether you walk into the RFDS or Lifeline office, you always walk out a better person after you've been in there. You know, I always talk about the first step in acknowledging the fact that there's something going wrong. It's very difficult to know if there's something going wrong. But at this point, I just decided to walk up the steps into the Broken Hill Base Hospital. Basically walked in there and I said, I need help. Sat down with a couple of psychologists and they diagnosed me with depression pretty much there and then.
And the challenge is, Brendan, isn't it really, is that it's very difficult for the individual, even, say, for you in them days, to walk in there unless you've got the support or, I suppose you can say, you're pushed by a partner or by somebody who cares for you. And I suppose that's one of the reasons this podcast goes out, is that we really like to emphasise the role that family and mates play.
That is one of the toughest parts about, you know, falling into a dark space, is not actually knowing if you're in it or not. It's very hard to assess that, self-assess. The fear of being diagnosed with depression is quite big, and the fear beyond how you're going to recover is big, and, you know, the fear of being put on medication is quite common. I don't want to go on medication. I'd rather do it another way. Well, the realities are, you know, in a lot of cases, medication is wonderful for people that have depression, and it works. So these are the tiny little things that are in your toolbox which make a massive advancement in your life. So it's the fear and it's the unknown beyond being diagnosed which gets most people. They don't want to know.
You're right that the medication can often get you over the hump. If we were prepared to talk about when we're ordinary, you know, when we're struggling with our partners and with our mates, is that often that'll turn it around, which cuts this period of feeling like shit short. And it's okay to feel like shit at times, but we definitely should be able to turn it around when something good happens and enjoy what we've got.
Talking to myself was something that probably crept in the last 20 years, I reckon. And it was just a coping mechanism for me to, instead of having a conversation with the people that matters, I was having a conversation with myself. And instead of confronting an issue, I would confront it with myself. So basically, I was the one that was making the decisions. I was the one that was not making the decision. I was the one that wasn't looking for help. So then I'd ask myself. It was all about what I was trying to construct in my own head. And as the journey went along, let's say from 20 years ago into 10 years, I was then dragging up the past about stuff that had nothing to do with the day-to-day basis of what I was doing.
So I find that quite interesting. So the talk you're talking about is nearly like what you see in the cartoons where you have the bad angel or the bad persona on one shoulder and the good persona on the other. And it seems to me from what you're telling me is that these conversations were like that. And in the end, there'd be no decision. And you're somebody who puts a lot on decision making, and perhaps that's what was frustrating.
I was guided into what they call mindfulness, and I know if you're feeling down or you're diagnosed with depression, someone slaps a book that's just got 150 pages in front of it, says, here, read this, you'll feel better at the end of it. You know, the last thing you want to do is read a 150-page book and then dissect it and then try and work out what's best for you. It's almost impossible. What I did use was the word mindfulness. So if the noises came back in my head, if I started talking to myself, I would just say mindfulness and I'd shut myself down straight away. And I've used that ever since. So now I don't talk to myself. And if I do, I go, ah, mindfulness, bang, she's all over. And end a conversation, waste of time having a conversation in my own head. So mindfulness has been great for me because I just use the word. It's a real simple way of jogging your brain back to where it should be. So it's been a huge tool for me.
If you approach a professional, they'll often have you write down your thoughts. Then that helps you actually be more formal in making a decision. So write down some of your thoughts. And I mean, you don't necessarily have to show that to anybody. I mean, you can burn them and whatever afterwards.
I think certainly from my perspective, I think we're very critical of ourselves. We can be our own harshest critic. And we also struggle with some feedback that we get from other people, whether it be inadvertently or, you know, direct, or if we dwell on them, it sits there forever and you keep referring back to it. So for me, that's what used to happen with me, and I was my own worst enemy.
Yeah. So, Brendan, do you think attending that life skill course right at the start by the Royal Flying Doctors, did that help you develop your own strategies on unrealistic goals, on setting, I suppose, achievable goals for you?
Yeah, it did. That course actually helped me construct a toolbox to deal with what I needed to do. Between the age of 25 and 40, there's a block there where it's quite common for people to lose their place or their goals in life. They're not achieving them, and therefore they start questioning who they really are or what they haven't achieved or have achieved or whatever it may be. The reality is that why does it need to happen at a quicker pace? And why does everything have to happen at speed? Why can't we slow down and smell the roses? You know, touch that tree. You know, how many times do you drive down your driveway and you've got a dozen trees on your right and a dozen trees on your left, but you only focus on the road? When's the last time you get out your car and you feel the trees? You know, you rub your hand along the bark or you look at it and you look at the growth in that tree. You know, you start recognizing stuff around you, but the only way you can do that is to slow down.
I'm interested because I heard a little story somewhere, but what are puffdaloons and what's the significance of them? Are they something that's in your toolbox?
Yeah, puffdaloons are a delicacy, a bush delicacy, basically flour and water, and you knead it into a dough and chop them up in little squares or circles and then deep fry them. I made it part of my life, certainly once the kids have come along, you know, three children, that any time that we've had 25 mil of rain, I'll cook them puffdaloons in the morning. It gives me great joy to be able to do that. I mean, it's just one of the simplest things in life that can give you a hell of a lot back, and to see the smile on the kids' face and enjoy those delights of a morning after you've had a big rain is very special. So you could say that would be part of my toolbox.
Yeah, so they're a tool that shines when you are happy, when you're in a good place, because it's about acknowledging that you're in a good place. But I found it interesting because one of your daughters was talking about that you cheated, but you had puffdaloons when you only got 97 points. But the thing about that yeah, you did it because it's accepting what you've got. I mean, sometimes we've got to accept that life ain't perfect. We're not going to get 100 points. We're only going to get 97, but let's be grateful for that. And that's what I liked about the puffdaloon story. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because you can set yourself goals, whether it be on farm, whether you need to complete something in the day, or whether you're running or you're swimming, and you set yourself a goal. And if you don't have the capacity to deal with the goal that you haven't met, you know, that's self-imposed pressure and it doesn't need to exist. I didn't knock myself about because we didn't get the inch, just cooked them anyway. And I've been in situations like that. Certainly I would impose a lot on myself to start my day and I'd have to meet those goals. There were plenty of times where I didn't meet them for one reason or another. I used to internally combust because I couldn't meet them. So really, in reality, I was setting my goals way too high for myself and I was putting too much pressure on myself, and I've learned to back right away from that. Maybe reflecting on the things that aren't right is what probably my problem was. The way I dealt with that was, and this is something I carry around with me all the time in my toolbox, is, you know, giving yourself permission to make decisions, regardless of whether they're right or wrong. Have the capacity to make a decision so you can then move forward.
This podcast has been made possible thanks to our mates at the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries and their Rural Resilience team. The Rural Resilience Program builds stronger primary industries by co-designing new products and services that support and enhance the growth of farming businesses. The Rural Resilience team listens to the needs of primary producers, learns about services and programs that could assist, and links farmers with the most appropriate services and information. This podcast is also brought to you by the Murrumbidgee Primary Health Network, also known as the MPHN for short. The MPHN, Empowering Our Communities Grant, is the federal government's way of walking the talk, demonstrating their commitment to supporting families and communities living with the impacts of drought with a focus on mental health and well-being. It's a whole-of-community approach to mental health and suicide prevention, encouraging and empowering local and rural communities to look for proactive approaches for mental health support and suicide prevention.
I believe that another tool in your toolbox would be mateship. How do you use them? Do they help with your decision-making, or they just help you in supporting the place where you're at the moment?
I've got a good bunch of friends who I can talk to. And if you do fall back into some old habits, you can ring your friends up, and I certainly do. I get great support from my friends because we're all like a team. We're a bunch of teammates. You know, we stick together, we have a chat, and we may not chat on a weekly basis or a monthly basis. It might be a random phone call once every 3 months where your friend will ring up or vice versa. And you'll just say, "How are you going, mate?" And you know that "how are you going, mate" means "how are you going, mate?" It's not a throwaway line. And it's really important because they will openly say, "Oh, I'm not going that well," or "things are pretty rough at the moment." There's instant support, instant help, instant relief. And that's the importance of having mates that you can confide with, talk with, be around. And it works. It works very well. So I do that. But also I've got great support through, you know, Lifeline and the RFDS. It's all available there. But I just love to be able to chat with my mates.
Talking about tools, where does swimming the English Channel come into it? Is there other reasons behind it? Is it just the act?
Well, I mean, I love setting myself goals, and whether they be realistic or unrealistic, you know, I think we all need goals. I've got this opportunity to have a crack at swimming the channel. I've got a coach down in Melbourne, and we're currently, when I say we, that is a we, because it's not just about the individual trying to get from point A to point B. It's about surrounding yourself with like-minded people that are keen to get you across there as well. So it's about getting a team together. It's about doing the training. It's about the end goal. So for me, I keep thinking about it daily, how I'm going to get across there. It's the excitement of the unknowns. You know, am I going to get stung by a dozen jellyfish? Is the water going to be too cold? Am I physically going to be able to get across there? Am I going to feed myself correctly? Hence having, you know, wonderful teams around you to guide you through the process. So there's a lot of work to be done, but it gives me a goal. So this goal was set certainly once I made the decision to have a go at swimming the channel. It was set probably the best part of 12 months ago. One of the interesting things this year was to get used to swimming through a winter. That was an experience in itself.
I thought you might have a higher voice, buddy. Yeah, I thought your voice might be an octave higher.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you. Part of the process is to fill your memory bank up with experiences. So the first 12 months leading into the next 12 months or the final phase of the training process is to learn what you can do and learn what you can't do and adapt to that, if that makes any sense. So I swam all through winter in the Menindee Lake Schoon. So I'd get in my car about half past five in the morning. I'd set my vehicle at 32 degrees prior to getting out, and I'd have a hot water bottle there, and I'd have my towel ready, and I'd prep, and I'd walk down to the edge of the water, put my skull cap on. I tell you, it was bloody cold. So I'd do probably 40 minutes max, I suppose, in water that was around about 10 degrees. That was enough. Basically, my hands would start cramping and seizing up and all the rest of it. So it's probably a little bit dangerous. So you'd really need to know your limitations. I don't know my limitations as yet, but managed to do that over the winter period, which has been a great experience. And I must admit, it can be a long winter, John, when you're doing that.
But, yeah, my voice is higher already thinking about the cold water.
Well, if we were talking about mates and whatnot, this is the interesting part. The open water swimming fraternity or family, there's another world out there of encouragement. You know, you plonk yourself in an environment where people are just helping you along your journey.
So when you're talking about this, I can see that swimming the English Channel is a great analogy of the journey in regards to mental health and mental well-being, is that you've got to do all the hard work, even though it looks like, well, it is the individual swimming it. It's not just the individual doing the channel to reach the other side, to reach your goals, to have success and to be happy. So I think... yeah, I think that's great. Actually, all the stuff you read into and put into this crossing, I can see are all elements of strategies of dealing with mental health. I mean, even all the difficulties. Once we get on that journey, sometimes it is like cold water. We've got to battle through. And I mean, the beauty is that there's people there to help us, and there are different options of having a warm car or having a warm place to stop in as we continue our journey.
Yeah, and I spoke about before, John, about give yourself permission to make decisions. I could have quite easily not done that and said, nah, I probably won't make it. You know, it's too hard. Well, it's not the case. And I just made that decision. I've been asked plenty of times, why are you doing it? And my simple answer is, I'm doing it for myself. I want to try and get across there. And the next common question is, what happens if you don't make it? Well, I don't have a problem with not being able to make it. I have a problem in not making the decision to not have a go at it. And that's the difference in the mindset that I have now than what I had a long time ago. So if I don't make it, I don't make it. But at least I know I've had a go at trying to get there. You know, inspiration comes in many forms, doesn't it? That it can be the simplest things. A lovely conversation with your daughter or your son. You draw on these things. You don't need to do these monumental type things. You can just draw on whatever you want to draw from. And I've learnt that from my coach, Michael Gregory, who is just an amazing swimmer, and he swam Loch Ness last year. I think he's one of 12 people in the world to ever do it. And I learn a hell of a lot from him. And he might send a message to me and he say, mate, what you did today, you've inspired me. And he goes and jumps in the ocean, away he goes. And he's basically spelt it out to me that the people around you inspire you all the time. You just got to realize that that's actually happening and not shutting off from it all. So it can come in many forms. There's inspiration around you everywhere.
I suppose that is the key message within this podcast, is that when you have a tough challenge in front of you, when you might be struggling with a trauma, there's inspiration all around you. I think that's the main thing that I've probably got from you, Brendan, and I really salute you in putting yourself out there and, positively moving forward, because that is the challenge in regards to mental health and mental well-being, is to understand that when it's tough, there's inspiration out there. We've got to be aware and be able to reach out and access it, whether it's our friends, whether it's the Rural Flying Doctors, Lifeline, whatever. We have to be aware of that. But also the wider community, we need to have our eyes open, and that when there's people like you crossing the English Channel, is that our support may be just the thing. There's just that little bit of inspiration when it gets really tough and you're on your own in the middle of that crossing, that'll tip you over. That's something, it might be John Harper talking with a high voice because I was making fun of you. Swimming in cold water might be just the thing that gives you that extra oomph to go. It's inspiration all around us. So thank you, Brendan, for being part of the podcast and letting us hear of the tools in your toolbox and some of the strategies that you've used to get to life as now. And I wish you all the best. Thank you, Brendan.
Good on you, John. Look, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And this is the thing that gives back. And I appreciate the fact that I was asked to come on this podcast. I love telling my story, and I am thankful that I was able to join in and play some sort of role. I think it's special. I love it. I absolutely love it. If I can leave you on that note, mate, I just say, be kind to yourself, and once you take that first step for help, you're on the journey of recovery, and that's a wonderful space to be in. But thanks very much, John.
Well, no doubt about you, Brendan. You're special to us too, mate, no doubt. I think you've really given us some food for thought and the people that will listen to the podcast. Good on you, mate.
Good on you, mate.
If you're struggling with your mental health and need to talk now, call Lifeline on 13 11 14. They're available 24/7. In finishing, a reminder that this podcast features general information only, and we recommend that you get independent advice from a qualified professional. Mate Helping Mate has plenty of links on our website with a number of great service providers across the country. Head to matehelpingmate.org.au. This podcast was a Room 3 production and brought to you by our mates at the Department of Primary Industries, their Rural Resilience Program, and the Murrumbidgee Primary Health Network. You can find out more about these organisations and the great work they do on our website. Other episodes of this podcast can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts by searching for Mate Helping Mate and hitting subscribe. If you like what you've heard, make sure you leave a rating to make it easier for others to find us. Better yet, share it with your friends and family to start a conversation about mental health in the bush. This podcast was produced by Aaron Johnson and AJ Clifford for Room 3, a production company that works with not-for-profits and social enterprise across Australia. A massive thanks to John Harper, who over the years has travelled this country tirelessly working to improve mental health in rural and remote Australia. And of course, his offsider Michelle, for her continued support for John and his work, and her hospitality for our crew and guests at the farm during recording. Recorded and edited by AJ Clifford. Original music by Southwark Sounds and stock by Soundstripe. Thank you for listening. Hoping you can move forward, and we hope that this makes a difference.